Hi folks, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carroll. Welcome you to the latest podcast from the Banter team. This week it's all about the Dublin accent. Our recent banter How Ya saw storybud filmmaker Jenny Keogh, Dublin Hun illustrator and artist Aoife Dooley, and writer and filmmaker Derek O'Connor join us to discuss the evolution of the capital city's accent, language and slang. You're going to learn some bleeding rapid new stuff in the next hour.
Hi everybody, welcome along here to Banter at MVP. My name is Jim Carroll. I'm the host of tonight's discussion and we're about to start talking now. So, first of all, before we start talking, we're going to show a film. And the film is Storybud. Many of you may have seen this already because we were using it heavily to advertise this. We used two things very heavily to advertise this discussion. One was this film Storybud, which was basically directed by Jenny Keogh, who's one of the panelists here tonight. And the other item of media collateral, I think is what we describe it, that we used to heavily plug the show was Aoife Dooley's Pox Bottle, which was basically a illustration using some well-known Dublin slang. We'll introduce you to the panelists in a minute. But first of all, here is Storybud.
Come here, did I tell you?
I was down with your man. You know your man?
I met her, getting off the Daniel Day.
She had an awful puss on her.
We nearly had a canary.
She lost the rag.
Aye, your man through the head.
My nerves were shot.
My head is melted.
She's a miserable article.
She'd have nerves on her. She'd fetch herself, Paris.
So this is it?
I wouldn't mind. She's a skinny malink.
Away out of that.
Storybud.
There's head the ball.
Who's Gaff we meet now?
What's the crack?
Any scandal?
Are you going for a jar?
I'm Lee Marvin, Elmi Nugger.
My belly thinks my throat is cut.
You're what?
I'm starving. Is that cougar on?
Ravenous, yeah.
Do you want a package of crips?
The head on him and the price of turnips.
He's an awful bleeding chancer.
I'm telling you, I wouldn't be with him. He'd only scourge you.
I'm as sick as the plane to Lourdes.
Banjoed.
I was in tatters.
Absolutely knackered.
I nearly broke me snot.
I was only mortal.
Scarlet for you.
Scarlet for your ma.
Scarlet for me life.
Don't worry, you'll be grand.
Have you got your record done?
What?
You're thinking. Mind you don't hurt your head.
That's savage.
That's whopper.
That's daily. He was only massive.
Stay at her.
The coat of your wool.
The hack of him.
I'm only messing with you.
Relax the cacks.
We're with him, yoy.
What planet is she on?
If you don't stop your messing, there'll be wigs in the green.
Ah, would you stop?
Stop the lights.
No way.
Are you for real?
Get the boat.
Janie Mac.
Face of monkey.
Mouldy.
Says I to her, says she to me.
Did you see the thing anywhere I'm looking for? I need it for the yoke.
The thing at me, Bob.
That yoke is banjaxed.
You what?
Keep sketching.
Peggy, he's chasing you.
Give us a shot at that.
You're wrecking me, boss.
Ah, don't be so scabby.
Sure, he'd take the eye out of your head and come back for the eyelashes.
And you already have a jack carried.
Jeepers!
Okay, folks, and now we have our panellists. So I'm going to introduce each one of them. Sitting right next to me here, this is Jenny. She's the director of that particular film. She's straight out of Crumlin. She is a photographer, filmmaker, and the director of Storybud. Next to her, straight out of Coolock, we have the Dublin Hun creator and illustrator, Aoife Dooley. And next to her, at the very end, we have an unscheduled arrival. Unfortunately, Sophie Gorman is sick and can't attend tonight, so luckily we have Derek O'Connor standing in. Straight out of Walkinstown, Derek is a writer, filmmaker, and playwright. Please give them a round of applause. Jenny, I'm going to start with you. What led you to kind of shoot Storybud in the first place?
Well, it was 2012, Christmas time, and I remember Ireland was in a position at that time where everyone was kind of ashamed to be Irish. It was like our heads were hung really low for the idea that we were such eejits for buying houses. And there was like this general feeling of shame. And I remember a lot of people had emigrated, and this conversation came up at Christmas about, you know, the use of our language and people missing it when they're away, and on the way we speak and the way people don't understand you when you live abroad. So I just thought it was an opportunity then to just go, right, have a bit of fun and see how we speak, record it, preserve it, and just have a laugh with it. And then I just got everyone to say their phrases, and I didn't think it was going to take off the way it did, and but it's kind of inspired me to try and do a series. But that was the essence of it, was just a simple idea to go, let's celebrate be proud of how we speak. Let's be proud to be Irish. We're not that bad.
Cool. Is this, that's the first in the series. You're playing more, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a few more done already. Like, and I did one for the four provinces, and I was trying to get one done for every county. So, but it's a lot of work.
Okay, grand. Yeah. Aoife, talk to us about Dublin Hunt. Talk to us about like where the Dublin Hunt creation came out of, and like, I mean, the fact that you've managed to, I suppose, string a whole life out of it now.
I started my work around the North Side probably back in 2011, but I only started doing the Dublin Hunt really after I finished college. I had nothing else to do, and I kind of just went back to, it kind of felt like I was on a school holidays because I had nothing to do, so I kind of went back to when I was kind of in my teenage years and was kind of like just remembering different phrases and stuff like that, and I just decided to kind of do something with it, but I didn't really think that anything would come of it. I just kind of was putting it up for a laugh, like. But
just for the benefit of anyone who doesn't know what Dublin Hunt is, describe her, because if I start describing her, I'm going to I'm going to make bags of it.
It's based around this character, but it's based really around like my life and like growing up in Coolock. But it's based around this character called Nikita, and she has a boyfriend called Anto, and
Now engaged, aren't they?
Yeah, they're now engaged. Yeah, she got him locked, and she had him holding a picture saying, "If I get 1,000 likes, I'm gonna marry Nikita." So yeah, he got his 1,000 likes and married her. Then, well, he's proposed to her with Johnny Onion Ring. She's from Coolock herself then, and her boyfriend or fiance now is her world, and she just loves spice bags and going out and having a bop with her friends and just kind of, she loves a rant as well. If someone has a go at her on Facebook, or if someone has something to say behind her back, she has none of it, and she's like, just, you know, she'd say something like, you know, she'd be like, "Oh, here, what are they saying about me? She's the image of Helga from Hey Arnold," or something like, you know, stuff like that, like, and you know, she won't have any of it, and so it's kind of just based around, like, I suppose, me growing up and other people I know, but I kind of take stuff that I hear on the bus as well. Like, sometimes, it only happened to me a few times, because my phone, I can't go on the bus without listening to music, and one time my phone died, and it was school run and everything, and I was like, "Oh, no," like, and I was listening to the kids talking on the bus, and then that was, like, where I kind of, that's when I started working my work around the North Side then, because I wanted to kind of keep that in relation to like my illustration and stuff. I wanted to kind of keep it kind of like almost paying like a homage to like where I'm from and that kind of thing. Like, but I just listened on the bus, and they were slagging some fella because he was a frigid, like, and they were like, "Oh, you're a frigid," like, and I was like, "Oh, no," like, and I just felt so bad for him, because I remember when I was in primary school, and they were like, "Oh, you're a frigid," and like, "No, I'm not," like, "I met someone on my holidays," where, and all the questions start flowing in, Trebolgan, and then what was his name, he was from Spain, like, who would, you know, this kind of thing, like, but every kid has done it, I think, like, but there was nothing worse than growing up and then being a frigid, like, I just kind of based it off little things that I remembered like that, and I think that's why it's kind of done so well, because so many people kind of relate to those little things, because they've been there themselves and that kind of thing, so.
I mean, Derek, the two examples that, like, I mean, Jenny and Aoife have given have both been kind of from real life, you know, people that are drawn from, like, I mean, Jenny's film featured people, like, real life people, and, like, I mean, what Dublin Hunt's about is, like, taking the lexicon and linguistics of what's around the Coolock and putting it onto an online series. But, like, I mean, most people think about Dublin accent, though. Like, I mean, the first thing they kind of gravitate to is what's portrayed on stage and screen, you know? You've got the likes of Ross O'Carroll Kelly, Love Hate, Dame Owen Ivor, you know, and you've kind of got all these kind of fictional characters and characters that for many people make up what Dublin accent is all about.
It's the same thing though with when Irvine Welsh did Trainspotting, you know, it was written in that kind of Glasgow vernacular, you know, and even when Roddy Doyle, like the first time, famously when his first couple of books came out, the Irish Times they didn't review them at first, and then they said, famously, I think it was John Bamble said, like, it's not even writing, it's just dialogue, you know, and he had such a perfectly tuned ear to the Dublin vernacular, to that particular voice, and I think he was the first person to really elevate it and celebrate it. And, you know, these days you're getting stuff like, has anyone seen Dublin Old School? Anyone see that recently? Hands, yeah. Which is an incredible piece of performance theatre, which is entirely, like, it's like mainline and the Dub vernacular, you know. Then the Ross O'Carroll Kelly at the other end, like, it's the same, you know, he's just, again, it's all written in a very particular language and a very particular style. And again, he just nailed something. And that's the thing, is that Dublin has these fantastic archetypes. So when you talk about the vernacular, there's many different fantastic vernaculars.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing as well is that you know, for such a small city, there's such kind of like disparity as well in terms of accents. The other thing I'm kind of curious about as well is over Christmas there was a documentary on about Luke Kelly, mm-hmm. and they showed Luke Kelly. They showed Ronnie Drew, I think it was John Sheehan, and like you listen to their accent, you know,
yeah.
and that accent's dying out. And that was like, I mean, like him done first of all, like 25, 30 years ago, like that was the Dublin accent, you know. And like I don't hear it as much. I hear it with older people, but younger people have a totally different kind of like totally different tone and timbre to their voice.
They got the same thing where they've just like I come from Walkinstown, and I don't sound. This is my second cousin here in the front row.
That you just met tonight for the first time
in many years, because we used to
be in
Bluebell together. But I came from Walkinstown, went to school in Temple Oak, where I had the Walkinstown accent hammered out of me for 4 years, where every single word was corrected, except for my kids now will give me a hard time because of the way I say Lurie. You say it again. Say what? Yeah. You saw what? And then from the ages of around 16 to 20, every day I got videos from and watched American films. So I still go, "Are you from America?" So I get that a lot. So it all kind of mashes up. So your kids, teenagers today, they're just watching satellite channels from they're around 13. And it kind of just infuses an existing accent with all these other elements. And it's kind of, and everyone sounds a little bit American these days because they're all picking up little turns of phrase. If you go to Donegal, for example, are you furiously disagreeing?
Yeah. Not disagreeing. I just don't think it's such an epidemic as what people.
No,
think
I just think
it
it's slightly. Like, it's all degrees. Like we both have spent time in Donegal, and
yeah.
every teenager in Donegal sounds like they're from the valley. Because they're all talking like that anyway, hi. But now they're kind of talking like this, you know. So it's like answering a question all the time. So it's just a slight little.
Do you think it's pronounced as that?
No, I think well, we were just talking briefly about it before we came up here, and it's like wherever you're from, I believe like the likes of Coolock or the likes of Crumlin or the likes of the Coombe or the likes of, you know, it's like everyone in that film is from, you know, Dublin 8, 12, you know, 5, 1, whatever, and they range in age group from like 12 to 80, you know. So I still know loads of kids in Drimna or Crumlin or, you know, Coolock, wherever it may be, that actually still have really strong Dublin accents that aren't really affected that much by it. And I think it's really just about what you're surrounded by. I know that there's this fear that, you know, it's been Americanized and homogenized, but it's not as bad as what people are thinking it is. Yeah. I mean, it goes back, this fear has been going back since like the 16th century, that we're going to lose all the way we speak. I mean, the first book written on this was The English and How to Speak Irish in 1910. And at that point, he was talking about, two centuries ago, it was still known that people spoke with replacing the TH with a D. So like he says, like, the books are there. That is mine, this is yours. And he's under the impression then that was going to die out. But it hasn't died out, you know. And that was in 1910, and he was talking about it being something that was more spoken like that back in the 16th century. So, I mean, there's dips and troughs, but I think the essence of the Dublin accent has always been the same and will thrive, and I don't think it'll ever die out.
In many ways then, like Aoife, I mean, Dublin accent is something that kind of like is quite magnetic and mongrel. It picks up things as it goes along. I mean, what Jenny's talking about there about these, that's and those and theirs dying out. I mean, in many ways, like that's been kept on and it's been added to, you know. I mean, when I look at the Dublin Hunt stuff, I mean, it's an amazing amalgamation of what I hear around Dublin North Side. But also there's hip hop influence in there. There's like a lot of youth slang in there that's coming from all over the place, you know. That like it's a mixture of kind of like what's local and global.
Yeah, I suppose for me the only time I've really like heard anyone kind of change their accent, and I think people will agree as well if they know anyone like this. Like my cousin, like he won't like leave his room, like he just plays on either his computer or his Xbox, and he just be online like playing like with Americans. So his accent's kind of changed a bit. Like he's from Jordan now, like, but his accent's kind of changed from that, like, and I find that really interesting. And I noticed it with like a lot of kids as well, that their accents have changed from stuff like that, or even like it's probably gone as far as like from watching videos, like because like the internet, like on Facebook, like you don't have to like scroll much for like a video to pop up and start playing. So it's I think like a lot of that influences it as well. But like as Jenny was saying, I don't think it's changed that much. I think it's kind of held on a long time. Like even like when I was on that bus that day and I heard like the kids talking, I understood like everything they were saying. Like none of the slang had kind of changed for me. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not that long out of school either. Like but like it kind of like you know what I mean. Like I could still kind of pick up on what they were saying and stuff like that now. But yeah, I think what were you saying again? Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I can't understand a word he's saying either. He's from the country.
I just go
anywhere that's not Dublin.
I just go on a rant and I kind of forget what I'm talking about, and then I try to save myself and I'm like, I have no idea what I'm talking about anymore.
It's just called bantering. So it's grand. You're under the influence. I want to go back to what Ginny said there, like Derek, and she's kind of, you mentioned here about sense of place, you know, and you mentioned there about Rolly Doyle. I think an awful lot of people forget that when Rolly Doyle, when those films like The Commitments and The Snapper were first shown in the States, they were shown with subtitles, you know, and like, you know, it's really interesting. Cause like Sophie Gorman was kind of talking to me about this over Christmas, and she was kind of going like, I mean, she mentioned the fact about the subtitles and the fact that like, okay, those films are subtitled, and you had to get that sense of place. It's like when you watch The Wire, you know, in order to understand that thick Baltimore slang, you know, I mean, but the easiest way I did it the third time around was just turn the subtitles on. Yeah. You know, they're like, you have to kind of like immerse yourself in the language, and the same with Dublin.
In the patois. But that's the thing though, is that it's also, like, in terms of, you know, like actors doing Dublin accents, it's always that thing, like you get a, British actors can always do a fantastic American accent, but the one thing that always trips actors up, full stop, when they come here is degrees of Irish accents. There's very few American actors have come over and done like amazing. Can anyone think of an amazing Dublin accent done by an American?
No, and it's because it's actually all based and derives from Gaelga.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, the whole pronunciation of our English has been very specific, and it was from the first invasion in the 12th century that, you know, we learned how to speak English through Irish.
Yeah.
So, and what happened for a few centuries after that was actually the native Irish people intermarried with the English, and we actually exchanged languages, and there was a point for a few centuries where everyone spoke English Irish until the plantations, where the rules came in. You were like, okay, you have to speak English now.
Yeah.
But that's where it all came from, like our pronunciations, and most slang is based on Gaelic that's been turned into an English word.
It's quite precise, and it's quite evolved, and that's the thing. Yeah. So everyone can do abroad, you know. That's like
the word film.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
The word film came from Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And that, obviously, we were taught to speak Elizabethan English, you know, Shakespeare. So he wrote words phonetically. So the way he wrote film was F-H-I-L-O-M-E.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that's how we then developed the word film.
Whereas in Dublin we spell it F-I-L-L-U-M.
Yeah, but it's about the pronunciation and why we end up saying the word film instead of film. Because it's really hard to say film as an Irish person.
But like when you said there about like Derek, about like being American actors doing good Irish accents. Or good Dublin accents. There's even some Irish actors who can't even manage a Dublin accent. Pierce Brosnan being a case in point.
I was watching Sing Street last night with Aidan Gillen doing his best Charlie Hawley again. And he was just doing that all the time in the corner.
Aidan is actually in tonight in the corner.
Well, great job. It's a great film. That's the thing, is that it's an amazing film. The accents are made, but he has I would say he's got a very particular Dublin accent. Like he's Aidan Murphy, he used to be in DYT, you know. But again, it's funny, it comes out in really peculiar ways, in particular words, particularly no matter what he's playing. When he goes full pirate in Game of Thrones, as he did last year, it's still the dub would come through. Or when he goes full Cockney in that amazing Jason Statham film, he's the bad guy. So it still kind of burns through. And like in the way, I suppose in the long history, like my favourite Irish accent in film is probably Brad Pitt in Snatch. You can't understand a fucking word he's saying. And it's like, it's perfect. It's brilliant, you know? Like, you've Gabriel Byrne, who's lived in Brooklyn for the last 15, 16, or maybe 20 years now, he's there, probably longer. And he's from walking since from Green Hills, and his Green Hills accent gets thicker every, like, he's gone full rubber dub, you know, that way, like, you get every single year he comes back.
But look, and it's broader, look at all the, like, you know, the thing about accents as well is that, like, sometimes it can flip-flop. We give out to people for, like, I mean, making a hash of Dublin accent, but, like, I mean, look what happens when someone's natural accent starts coming out, which is Saoirse Ronan, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really interesting that, like, the last couple of weeks she was getting her right hammering and right kicking up the hoop because of her accent. And, like, if you go back to the way she was at the very start, her accent was kind of like, because she came originally from Carlow or Wexford or some of that, moved to Dublin at a young age, yeah, her accent's been all over the shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, to be honest, I think that's a load of crap as well, because, yeah, she's, like, still very young as well. And, like, I watched a video, I seen a video on her, and she was, like, when she was really young, and she might have sounded a bit posh or whatever, and then she kind of changed and it got thicker, it went along, like. But, like, sure, like, I was just saying to Jenny, I think my accent's changed in the last couple of years, like, from my boyfriend's family, like, they're from inner city, like, and, like, I think my accent's kind of got thicker without me even realising it, like, from just being around them constantly, like. So I think it's a bit kind of, I think it's a bit petty for people to be pointing out, oh, her, she doesn't talk like that. So what if she does talk like that? And if, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think it's just petty, like. But, like, yeah, I think your accent can change and develop, like, especially when you're that young. What, she's only, like, 21 or 22, isn't she? So, yeah, like, she's...
But it's the most natural thing in the world. It's who you're hanging out with.
Yeah,
it's where,
exactly,
you go to,
yeah,
school.
Yeah,
you,
yeah,
it's, like, that sense, you know, of, is that, yeah, sense, yeah, of place? Exactly.
Some, yeah, people who, like, they were born in England and they lived there till they were 8, but they never quite lose a certain, you know, some, yeah, some people move over here and they go kind of full method in 6 months, do you know what I mean? And the accent, it's just, it's a,
yeah, definitely,
some, in some cases, it's a defence mechanism. Yeah. You just start talking like everybody else, and, you know, and some people just, and there's also people, if you ever have a conversation with an actor, do you know, when you ever have a conversation with an actor and they start, like, adopting your words and feeding it back to you because they're like, oh yeah, yeah, because they're sucking it up and they kind of, you know, if they talk to them, they throw in a little eye or a little, you know. Yeah. And that's just how people roll, you know.
Yeah, but then there's like, I mean, there's actors as well, like, who have got very strong Dublin accents and who've never washed it down, and they've done quite well internationally. I mean, one person in particular is Johnny Murphy. I mean, people probably remember him. He's the actor who played Joy the Lips in The Commitments, you know. But, like, I mean, he was doing Waiting for Godot. Got it? The Beckett thing.
Godot.
The Beckett joke. When he was doing the Beckett joke, right? His Dublin accent was very, very strong in that, and it became a feature of it as well. That, like, often, like, many times, we kind of forget that actors, when they have very strong accents in place, they can become an asset.
Well, Colin Farrell, again, he's someone who's kind of dubbed it up as the years have gone on. He's gone full dub at times, do you know what I mean? And he's perfectly middle class, you know? Like, in terms of, if you watch different interviews at different phases over the years, the accent is, like, Christian Bale is Welsh, apparently. Do you know what I mean? Christian Bale did all the press for the first Batman film in an American accent so as not to confuse people. So the Farrell's kind of gone, he's kind of relaxed more into the dub accent as he's kind of come back. But then when he was doing stuff like Alexander, he did, and that was the big thing with Alexander, where he got, you know, he hired Colin Farrell, and obviously either he decided it was too hard to try to get Colin Farrell to do the accent, but he'd just bring a load of dubs on board as well. You have someone like Liam Cunningham, who's an amazing actor, who has specialised in playing Liam Cunningham types in many, many films now, but he's always the full. Like, I know he's Geordie in, again, Game of Thrones, but he's quite often, he does his full, he does his dub accents, and again, he's like, he's got an amazing accent, you know?
Have any of you come across anyone, like, I mean, who's moved away from Dublin, whose Dublin accent has remained strong?
Gabriel Byrne's amazing. Like, and again, he's like an ambassador for Dublin, yeah, as the years have gone.
My uncle moved to London in the 60s, and he's since passed away, but he never, ever lost his Dublin accent ever for the 40 years he was in London. And, I mean, it's one of those phrases that I always springs to mind when I think of him. You know, everyone these days says, super, it was super this, it was super that, or it was incredible. And I often think, just what happened to the two words? It was really brilliant, you know? Yeah. And every time I think of him, I think of the words, that was his phrase, it was really brilliant, yeah, you know? Yeah. But he was old school Dublin, and he never, never tainted his accent at all, living in Peckham. So
it's one of the few things you have to hold on to, though, as well. I think for a lot of people,
well, it's about identity
when they move away. Yeah. Exactly, you know, it's the, and people revel. I lived in New York for a few years, and sometimes when you meet another dub, you immediately revel in a turn of phrase, or just Americans can never get over how, when you're straining to remember someone, you go, your man, Bill Clinton, and they're like, what? You know, so it's like little, and it's just that twink of just like, you know, or someone's bad, like, you know.
It's worth after, like, being going to YouTube, and there's a video online of kind of Samuel Beckett from 1987 interview, and, like, I mean, midway through the interview, about 10 minutes into the interview, you, his accent suddenly switches into a Dublin accent, switches back into his, and you're kind of going, you're just staring at the screen, kind of going, what just happened there? And like his natural voice, apparently, his natural voice, even towards the end of his life, was a mixture of kind of like this kind of neutral accent, and then every so often, because of what he was talking about, it would switch back into this Dublin accent.
He spoke in French for the majority of his life as well, so I suppose when he goes back to speaking in English, he's going to speak with his original accent, you know. So,
like, well, the other thing, and you kind of touched on it a bit there, Aoife, earlier on, was like, I mean, people like disparaging the Dublin accent as well. I mean, that's something that's kind of coming across, I suppose, not just in the kind of the work of Ross O'Carroll Kelly and Paul Howard, you know, about like, I mean, this kind of like class divide. Like sometimes when I look at the way people talk about like Dublin accent, I often think that like it's a clear evidence of class war, you know, that like you're setting up people in the north side against the south side, and it's just for a city of around a million people, it just seems all a bit much.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, sure, there was an article out there, like, last week on me, and I don't know if you're familiar with Dublin Gerlo, like, but, like, yeah, there was an article on us, like, but when the journalist emailed me, that wasn't what the article was going to be about, so it was actually she kind of...
Journalists are scum, aren't we?
I wouldn't have minded, but it was kind of just, like, it was, like, which one are you? And it was, like, Dublin Hone versus Dublin Gerlo, and I wouldn't even mind, but... We're completely different in a way, like, and it's kind of like I wouldn't really say there's a war or anything there, like, so I don't like if there's people from the south side that follow my page, that's grand, like, I'm not, like, I don't really care, like, you know, like, I've nothing against the south side, I've never really been over there now, like, but, like, you know what I mean, like, but I've nothing against it.
You're guaranteed safe passage home.
The maddest thing is that there's loads of people in the south side, from the south side and the north side, who talk exactly the same.
That's what I mean, yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly, like, yeah, because it depends on where you are from on the south side. Sure, if you're from Tala, you're not going to talk like this, you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? Not just me, I know people from Tala just saying. Yeah, but you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? So, you're not going to, you know, there is parts on the south side that will be kind of similar to parts where I'd be from on, like, the north side as well. Like, but yeah, like, I don't really like the whole, like, class divide thing, but, like, in my work, like, I can't really talk because that's what it is, like, but I'm kind of honing in on where I'm from, and it'd be the same with, like, it's the same with, like, Roddy Doyle and what, like, he talks about, he's talking about, like, and writing about where he's from, and do you know what I mean? Like, and, well, I don't know, that's, I think, like, and then Ross O'Carroll Kelly as well, like, it's kind of, like, he'd be honing in on, like, the south side, kind of, and, you know.
Yeah,
so that's the thing, when you're talking about a Dublin accent, like, what Dublin accent are you talking about? Yes. Do you know what I mean? Like, the thing, like, Dublin, in the same way that people go, oh, Dublin's a classless society, my hole, you know, in the same way that, like, there's many Dublin accents. The thing that happens in a lot of times with the accents is the accent denotes the class.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Look at your man speaking.
People assume the posh you are, the wealthy you are, the more educated you are. So, therefore, you know, if
the
you're...
The way the voice goes. Yeah. And the thing about the Ross Carroll O'Kelly, like, is that, again, he's... Like, he's got that really weird thing where on one hand he's taking the piss out of that, you know, particular stratosphere of life, but I went to see one of the shows, one of the theatrical, you know, presentations in the Gaiety, and I looked out in the audience and it was just Ross O'Carroll Kelly's. Like, they reveled. It was the home crowd. Do you know what I mean? They love it. They self-fulfilling nightmares. You know, they're all just sitting there in the first rugby shirts as far as the eye could see. You know, so it's
popped collars now.
But he. He celebrates it at the same time. And the thing about it, it's not only the accent, but it's the language. And that's what your film, because your film is all about the turn of phrase. It's all this amazing turn of phrase. I was getting the bus in the other day from Walkinstown Roundabout. There was three, and it's one of my favourite Walkinstown terrible, terrible expressions. And it's basically this expression where, like, if there's a teenage girl and there's a load of teenage lads watching her and she walks by and they want to embarrass her, And they will all shout out, they'll go, Diddy Wobbles! Which is basically, there's a young girl who's self-conscious about it, we're going to shout that and just mortify her. I've never heard it anywhere other than, have you heard that before?
Pure Walkinstown, but
it's all about turns of phrase. Yeah. And that's what you do, that's what's brilliant about the film. There's certain... Just like there's always something you've never heard before. There's some in the film.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like you're collecting language.
Yeah, and that's
Carroll Kelly's
evolving.
Doing the same thing too. It's a constant evolution, a turn of phrase, and that's what I think Dublin does, and that's what they love the language. You know, they love it. And this again, Dublin Old School. If you see it, it's an amazing piece because it's just so in love with the language,
and also totally, and also because, well, I mean, the language is kind of an oral tradition, so it doesn't rely on books or whatever. It's like all these kind of phrases being carried along. You know, I mean, my late father-in-law had he also has expression like, I mean, you know, you didn't lick it from the stones, you know, lick it, and you're kind of going, where did that come from? You know, and you try and kind of trace it back, and like in Story Bud, you've got to kind of all those phrases, but there's way more as well. And often you come across stuff, and sometimes you kind of wonder, is it a Dublin expression? Like, I mean, one of my favorite Dublin expressions is your hoop, you know, and I think it's a Dublin expression. It used to be, there's another expression years ago called like numpty, and I was convinced it was a Dublin expression, but not, it came from Scotland and it kind of migrated over here. And next thing you're kind of going, like, there's a mix and match.
There's a lot of Ulster Scot influences and English,
but that's the idea, is you can riff on it, you know what I mean? So, plank, your man's a plank, do you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, that's, you know, or. Yeah. Spannerhead was a big one, you know.
Another, like, you know, like, given that kind of riffing as well, I mean, have you all you come across, I suppose, new additions to the Dublin lexicon in the last couple of years?
We were just saying, like, I didn't think it has changed that much. Like, I haven't heard it new, but then again, I don't be hanging around with 16-year-olds either, so I don't really know. Like, but no, kind of like the only things that I've come across, like, and you probably laugh now, but I'd never heard it before until I was with like my boyfriend's cousins, and we were just watching like The X Factor or Big Brother or something. They watched like that, like, so I just sit there and watch it. But yeah, they were getting a curry, like, but she said like Ruby Murray, but I'd never heard that before, like, from where I'm from. But I think that's I'd never heard that, like, but like that's what they'd all call it in town. They wouldn't dare say curry, like, they just say Ruby Murray all the time, like.
And that Dublin fondness for rhyming slang as well, like, I mean, you know, it can sometimes be really good, because I mean, Ruby Murray was a singer back in the 50s or 60s as well, so like there's probably an element of that in there as well, with older people having curries for the first time. But sometimes it can go horribly fucking wrong. I mean, I used to hate the way people, I still do hate the way people refer to things like the spike on Collins Street as the sletter in a ghetto, or like the floozy in jacuzzi, and you're kind of going, sometimes some of it seems very contrived, some of it seems very, very like unnatural.
They're trying hard. Well, you have the Daniel Day in the film, which is, I think, one of the better, the more acceptable recent additions to the lexicon, you know. But you can't have a new rubbish monument in Dublin without people killing themselves to come up with a, you know, rhyming analogy. Yeah. So, but that's the thing. It's just, I think there's a certain glee in the language. You know, there's a glee, and it's the same. And again, it's an Irish thing.
Kind of rebellious, though. It's kind of like we're not going to succumb to the English language. We're always going to make it our own. You know. So wherever we can, we'll add humour and wit to it and make it our own. You know. And then it's like, how did the word yoke become a ting and then become an e?
Like,
I'm still looking up that one. Who decided it was an e? Like,
but swearing full stop. There's a glee, like a glee. Like, your man's an awful bollocks. Do you know what I mean? But it's also it's like there's that's one thing that freaks Americans out. Yeah. For example, as a particular
Americans are fucking
what we would refer to as the C word. You know, which we will all happily use in conversation. You know, if you say it in front of a bunch of Americans, it just not only stops the conversation. The evening is over. Do you know what I mean?
Because Americans and other cultures sometimes look upon, like, I mean, cursing and swearing as gratuitous. Whereas in Dublin case, it's not gratuitous. It's about emphasis.
It can be a term of affection as well. Yeah. You know, he's an awful gobshite. Yeah. You know, whereas in London or somewhere, like, a gobshite is a gobshite, an absolute fool. Yeah. But like, it's kind of a terms of affection. He's an awful prick. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but he's nice. Yeah. You know, so it's kind of, you know, that type of thing we do.
Yeah. It's just like he's harmless kind of thing.
He's harmless.
He's a bit of a gee bag sometimes, but he's, you know.
Well, call him a man a gee bag. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
okay, so speaking of harmless gee bags and pricks, let's turn to Roddy Doyle. Has Roddy done more or less for, like, I mean, Dublin, and I mean that for most fondly, Roddy, because I know you've listened back to the podcast. Like, has Roddy done good things for Dublin language and slang, or has he kind of, like, I mean, queered the pitch?
He's the king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he elevated. I think those books are, and that was they said that they're so magnificently written. And I think because he had years in the classroom and he had a great ear, so he picked it all up. And I think he was lucky because those films are still kind of standalone and they're so beautifully, he was so lucky. Like those first three, and then Family, which actually hasn't been seen for years, his TV show as well. He just so absolutely, like, there's such a celebration of the language, you know what I mean, like everything about it, and so much Dublin language has travelled, like even the commitments for, like, if you look at the commitments, like the mix of actors and the mix of, like, you've Brona Gallagher in the middle of us from Derry, you know, you've all sorts of actors in there, she does one of the great Dublin actors, you know, but they all get away, like Andrew Strong has a terrible, Dublin accent in the film, but he gets away with it completely because it's just, the language is fantastic. Johnny Murphy, is fantastic. So yeah, he's the king. Yeah, and he can still, the things he does now, you know, those little columns he does, the two lads sitting on the pub stool, two pints. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. And again, it's just that thing, it's just obviously stuff he's picking up, you know, but he can just, that ear's so finely tuned. It's incredible. And it is a staccato. It's like Marco Rowe. You know Marco Rowe,
yeah.
Who wrote Intermission, and he wrote, I think he stepped it up a level as well with Howie the Rookie, which is, again, it's, I would say, is a precursor to Dublin Old School. It's two monologues, you know, and the language is so pure. And I think he's Oro-esque. He's from Talla, and he was... He just watched films growing up, and he would say himself, he just gorged himself on David Mamet, was his big influence when it came to writing plays. And he used to love all the Glengarry Glen Ross and American Buffalo and plays that are so specific in their language. And that's in all his plays, is a real, real love of the of words, you know, and that's the thing. And it becomes a whole, and he takes on, it's very heightened. And it's funny because Intermission, which is an amazing film, and still holds up. I think it's one of the great Irish movies. There's two terrible Dublin accents in it. The Scottish actor, what's her name, Kelly MacDonald, and you know, who are in the film, I think, to get the funding. They just don't pull it, but it jars because it pulls you out of the movie a little bit because they just can't do the language as well. Intermission's amazing. There's another one called Perrier's Bounty, which is not as good as Intermission. But it just, the language isn't as quite, something about Intermission, it just sings. When it works, it just sings. A very particular thing to do right, you know.
Yeah. Let's go back to Roy Doyle. I mean, you said he was a king there earlier on, like, I mean, Aoife, you know. Does that kind of hold water as well, but kind of, like, I mean, say, the people who would be admiring and looking up at Dublin Hunt, that he can still hold it up for them?
Yeah, like, I think, like, well, his stuff, like, it's timeless. Like, if your little cousin turned around to you and go, oh, I haven't seen The Snapper, you're like, what? Like, and you showed them it, and then, like, in a couple of years, when they're 17, they're going to turn around and go, what? Like, the same thing. Like, it's just going to keep, like, it's on a roll, and it's not going to stop because they're all classic films. Like, but, like, yeah, like, I say, like, my work, like, because I don't do films right now, like, it'd be just illustration-based, like, but, like, it's, yeah, like, I say, it gets the same kind of run with, like younger kind of people, like, teenagers and, like, in their early 20s, like, because they'd relate to, like, the things that I'm saying, like, and it's kind of... Yeah, like, it would have, like, the same kind of humour, I suppose, in that way. Like, well, I kind of go a bit kind of further out. Like, I kind of go just before the line so it doesn't offend anyone. And if it goes, you know, just before the line, like... But in saying that, like, you know, I have got people, like, who have turned around and said, oh, that's very offensive. And I go, oh, really, is it? Like, what do you find offensive about it? And they have nothing to say. Like, they just want to have a go. Like I remember someone saying to me they were offended because I said something about someone hiding a nagging in their home bone. Like, I was like, how is that offensive? Like, you want to get some thicker skin. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, and I was just like, oh, you know.
Well, why do they find it offensive?
That's what I mean.
Surely that's where the nagging goes.
That's genius.
Well, I used to have a home bone, but I cut my hair off because my hair's crap. Like, it's like baby's hair. Like, and so, like, when I had it up, like, it was only like a tiny little one. Like, I'm telling you now, like, if I had a big head of hair, like, I wouldn't stop. Like, if I was going to a festival, I'd put everything in that. Like, I'd be just saying, yeah, I'd have joints and the lock going in, and like no one have a clue. Like, yeah, just a bomb underneath. Yeah, everything.
We've talked an awful lot about, like, I mean, the, like, you know, the natural old school Dublin accent. We've talked an awful lot about the lexicon, the language. We mentioned briefly kind of like Ross O'Carroll Kelly. I want to kind of, like, I suppose, kind of head out of here and head over to the kind of coast and take the Dart, and especially the Dart accent, you know, and this Dart accent, this aberration, you know, and it's become interesting to kind of trace where it came from. It did arrive on the fucking Dart, you know, it really did. It was this kind of all these Americanisms, you know, it's the most unnatural accent going, but Derek, as you said earlier on, it's now gone to place where there's no trains at all. Funny goal.
Well, this is when the Lewis lines cross. I have this idea for this film, and it's like, it's apocalyptic Dublin, and there's like not a building left. There's like a few zombies, and the whole place is smouldering to the ground. And then you just see two Lewises crossing across that bridge on Abbey Street. You know where they're going to cross, and they're going to bring
it
over in the mist.
Rosie Hackett Bridge.
And then it'll just come up, and it'll just say, and it'll go, and it'll cut to Dublin, perfect, 3 weeks earlier. And that's it. The minute the two Lewis lines cross, that's it. It's the most unnatural thing that's ever going to happen to anyone who's ever been on the north side Lewis and the south side. I get on the north
red
side Lewis
line,
which is the party bus out to Talla, which is just... pure.
I've only ever been on the Green Line once, and it was so boring. Yeah. I got off it.
Saturday, like, the Northside one, Warriors come out to play, and then the one out to Sandyford. Sure, yeah. It's full of middle aged lads all sitting there going, I didn't pay. I haven't paid. I've been getting it for years. Getting it for years again. It's pretty, you just walk on.
Do you want to ask me a way?
Yeah, tea please, and there's a tea service.
And there's no chance of a car ever driving into because it's actually on the old original track of the Harcourt line. Whereas the red line, anything can happen.
Yeah.
You know.
So like being train spotting kind of like nerdy trains and Lewis's side though. I mean that Dart accent, that Dublin kind of like that Heineken, that kind of like bizarre valley accent, you know. Has anyone got any theories as to why it suddenly landed in Dublin? What was responsible for it kind of like spreading and taking off like a day?
I'm not sure. I've been looking into this and I know the D4 accent as it was known was always there because it was associated with education, with whatever. But they're actually blaming RTE on it. A lot of people are blaming
Montrose voices, they call it.
It was kind of the presenters themselves and all got a bit uppity and got influenced by American TV and started introducing gore and all this type of thing, or exaggerating words. But it's very hard to pinpoint when it happened. They're trying to say that it was in and around the late 70s, early 80s, where it distinctively started becoming different.
It was BBC. So it's like the way with BBC English. You know, they have the proper RP. BBC.
So the Dart accent is the Irish equivalent of RP.
Well, when you were growing up and maybe watching the majority of people you would watch on TV, the majority of dubs you would see on TV, there was never there wasn't much portrayal of working class Dublin life on, or even ordinary Dublin life on RT for many, many years.
Fair City.
Yeah, and it goes back to the point of the
Garda Patrol.
Yeah.
crime line.
Fair City. My nanny like watches it now because there's nothing on. She calls it Fair City. Like she got like them accents are atrocious. Like
Fair City is beloved. Like I know plenty of people's mammies and grannies and
The nannies
absolutely
all watching
lap it up.
And
you
around
know?
The country, I know a lot of people in Donegal who have to get home for Fair City because they actually think that that's how us Dublin people live.
And they've only got two channels up there.
No, that's not fair.
moving on. Before we take a break, we're going to take a break for a while, and then we're going to get some questions from the floor, which they're going to totally and utterly tear us apart. Where do you think Dublin accent is going to go? I mean, is there a rival of lots of people from Africa and Asia to Dublin? Is that going to have a difference in terms of what the language is going to be like and what I suppose the lexicon is going to be like and the accent as well? Or is the fact that lots of new Irish people are coming here and they've got even better Dublin accents than we have? Is that going to have an effect? Where does it go from here?
Well, I think the opposite will happen. I mean, I'm actually working on it. At the minute, I've been, trying to find people of new Irish people living here, like for the last 10, 15, 20 years that I pick up. And I was in a mechanics last week and it turned out he was Romanian, but he had one of the strongest Dublin accents I've ever heard, you know. So I'm trying to do something like that now where I actually, you know, do a whole thing on foreign nationals, or you know, as we like to call them, but and because I think it'd be the opposite, because they will actually absorb our Dublin accent and actually bring life into it. I mean, I don't see it going the other way.
Yeah, really. I think that as well. Like, sure, like I remember, like, I was getting a curry, but I was getting a spice bag the other day, and like before anyone says this is racist, it's not. Like I was ordering a curry, your man knocked on the door, and I was expecting him to have a really thick, Asian accent, but he had a thicker accent than I did, and he was like, oh, I'm right out tonight, pal. I'm out the door, I'm so busy, I just wasn't expecting it, but you do see it a lot more.
It's like what happened in London,
years
ago.
Yeah, it's happening here.
There's still the kind of shock at the new, though. And that's the thing. We've been kind of dragged, kicking and screaming into multiculturalism, and Dublin is full on, or close enough to full on multicultural now.
Yeah.
But people will still get a real shock when they... It's like all those years ago when Kevin Sharkey's on Father Ted, Osher, I'm from Donegal. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of, you know, people don't expect it, and we're still... Yeah. And I do, I think it actually, that's the thing, it'll morph in that way, just very naturally assimilate, you know. But if you're talking, are we going to talk about hip hop? Are we going to talk about Dublin hip hop and stuff? It feels like
yeah, go on.
But I just feel like in the end, but say for example when Damien Dempsey started out, I remember the first time Damien Dempsey released Dublin Town, which I think was his first single. Yeah. Was that his first single?
He just totally disowns it now.
Which he totally disowns it, and he's just singing in the thickest. It did feel a bit like a novelty comedy record, you know, that way, because he's so ridiculously full on Dublin, you know. And he kind of, I don't think his voice has changed that much, but I think he's a soul singer. I think he's got an incredible soul voice.
I think he's definitely found kind of like another.
He's found another his voice, and his voice has evolved in this really interesting fashion. But at the same time, he's very quintessential. Like, is that way? Like, how many people sing with a Dublin? I know the sing with a Dublin accent. How many people sing where you could hear even a hint or an intonation of a Dublin accent? Luke Kelly, you know, if you go back to the trad singer, they all you can hear the accent. But I think Damien Dempsey pushed it into a whole other. Arena, and I think in terms of say Dublin hip hop, and there is a pretty. What about you, Mr. Music Writer Man? What do you think of Dublin hip hop?
Dublin hip hop is really interesting because I mean, last year at the Hard Working Class Heroes Festival, like I mean, it was in danger of becoming the Hard Working Class Hip Hop Festival. There were so many kind of like new Irish acts who were just getting up on stage and doing and just playing really really well, but the accents were really interesting. The accents were kind of American, African and Irish in this bizarre mix. It wasn't the Dart accent. It wasn't like that. It was just a bizarre way. And off stage, they've got, like, I mean, as Aoife was kind of saying, they have stronger Dublin accents than most people, you know? Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting is that, like, you know, these are people, I remember, like, I mean, when, like, immigrants started arriving here, you were kind of thinking, okay, it's going to be really interesting 10, 15 years when they're making music. But what's happened is they didn't make music. Their kids made music, and it's what the kids are making, the way the kids are kind of like assimilated with like native white Irish kids, the fact that where I live in kind of Fairview Merino, you know, that like I mean the white kids and the kind of like black kids, they get on, they don't see any difference anymore. It's like they've grown up together, so it's like it's very very natural, and the accents have completely mingled. But like I mean, there's a musicality to the, kind of like I mean to the African kids which the Irish kids don't have. It's kind of like the Irish kids is kind of like play that funky music. White boy, you know. Was that the answer? Was it?
I'm just interested. But I don't know. But it's like there's been a lot of Irish hip hop at this point. You're around. Like I've been listening to Irish hip hop records for at least 10 years, and I can't say I've heard an amazing one. And maybe I don't know if that's the skill set or if that's the
new was in Gano Family album. Sorry. But
no, are we talking about like the lyrics? Are we talking about the content? Yeah. Are we talking about what are we talking about?
I'm talking just about something that actually translates into a kind of a relatable, like there's an Irish element to it. Because so much of it, I know so much hip hop full stop is imitating American hip hop. But I just, because again, it goes to Dublin Old School. Dublin Old School takes, you know, your basic Dublin patois and makes it something musical. It is. It's the closest thing probably to Irish hip hop I've heard. Like, it's amazing, you know? So, that's in a theatrical setting, you know?
What's that? I can't think of his name now. Like, that Irish rapper. Oh, I can't think of his name. Does anyone know him? He's like, I think he has an album. It's like 1980.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty good.
Or listen to Tommy KD's album, you know, like Karma's a Bitch, you know? That's pretty raw, you know?
Or Pass the Freedom, Rats from the Flats.
On that note, we should take a break for a while. Love it's him. Now 7:20, so we give you about like 10-15 minutes to get a drink, get a stroll. If anyone's got a dog as well at the moment, this is a very dog-friendly pub, so you can take your dog for a stroll.
Aww,
so
no,
please
get
a round of applause, please, to Ginny, Aoife and Derek. Hi, folks. Welcome back here to Bantered MVP. While people are getting ready and coming back in, we'll be taking questions from you. But our panel are back, so we've got Derek, we've got Aoife, and we've got Jenny. So any questions from the floor? So just put your hand up, and we'll take questions. Don't be scared. I mean, Jesus, you know, I have loads of other more questions. If no one else has got anything else. Yep.
So yeah, it's not really a question. I'm just going to think out loud for a second.
I've been doing that for the last hour.
Identity is something that is of interest to me, and I was one of those guys that grew up, that you spoke about earlier, that I grew up in the UK and came to, not Dublin initially, but the southeast of Ireland, and you spoke about identity. You also mentioned the unnatural Dart accent. You might say unnatural about another accent as well. And I just pick a hole with the word unnatural in that, to go back to identity, that accents are absorbed and contrived. I remember walking home from school and practicing faking an Irish accent so that I would fit in with my schoolmates. And I think that in terms of the Dart accent, it's contrived as opposed to unnatural. I don't think an accent can be unnatural, really. But
I know exactly what you mean. You mean like, you know, they, like the Dart accent is people identifying with a certain kind of, like, you mean segment.
It's identity tribalism as well, and somewhat aspirational. Maybe not to do with status, but it's aspirational as in.
But it's also like, just go back to something though that you said at the very start though, like, you know, like, I mean, the fact that, like, I mean, you kind of were born in England, you came back over here, and, like, I mean, you were trying to kind of fit in, you know, so yeah. your parents made a decision to kind of come go over to Ireland and kind of be reared in Ireland, and, like, I mean, immediately you're in a situation where you're coming back with kind of like this accent which sets you out as the other, you know, and, like, you know, next thing is, like, you're trying to kind of, like, get rid of the accent, you're trying to assimilate, you're trying to, like, hide, you're trying to identify with other people, you know, and, like, you know, it's fascinating, like, I mean, but what often happens as well is that when people come over with when people come into a community, a closed community, often a monocultural community with a certain, with different accent, that often as well, like, I mean, people do envy that accent, you know?
Yeah, well, part of me wishes I didn't. In the same way, I mean, in the same way, there's a kind of a cling or a hope to cling on or hang on or keep this, whatever this umbrella Dublin accent is. I kind of regret that I lost the accent that I grew up with, because I feel it was contrived. I was actually forced to lose the accent that I naturally had. And I remember walking home from school repeatedly saying "car" out loud, which sounded very unnatural to use the word unnatural to me. But I did have to contrive an accent that would make me feel it fit in with everybody else. And also, I would say, when I grew up in England, I was seen as Irish. When I came to Kilkenny, I was seen as English. When I came to Dublin, I was a Colchi. And when I got back to Kilkenny, I was seen as a Dub.
There is a defense. I remember I have an uncle who emigrated to England in the 80s, and there was that thing where at the time it was so politically loaded, in order to assimilate, he had to, you know, lose the accent. He had to lose it right away, because our people would always say, like, if you're on the tube and two Irish people were, you know, if you were talking, you'd talk quietly just in case, because an Irish accent would put people off, because at the time it was a thing, you know, it was a thing. There was a political element to it as well. So it is, there's a kind of, and I think it is, it's tribal. Dublin's incredibly tribal anyway. So it is the most natural thing in the world that your accent will adapt, and, you know, and I think
the old Dublin accent itself was always associated with peasantry anyway, you know, so that's always going to be the case, you know, unfortunately. And I think there was someone who said online, when I read up on something, that when they abolished the fees for third level education, that there was a bit of a hoo-ha amongst the G4 crowd, that the idea that there would be free education for these peasants, you know, that kind of way. So there's always going to be that, because it is associated with status, it is associated with education, it is associated, and always, always has been, you know. But thankfully we live in a society now where actually someone with a Dublin accent, whatever that may be, outside of the D4 accent, can actually get an education and better themselves.
When Bertie was the first, because Bertie was the first hardcore dub Taoiseach, wasn't he? He's like the first proper, you know, that he was like, he had a slightly, vaguely gruff Dublin accent that, again, if you watch him in clips over the years, was massaged and hammered and smoothed out and was nicely rounded off by the time he was in full flow. That was a case of, like, a key public figure who was going out. That was a type of dub that you hadn't seen hold that kind of, like, Charlie was a different thing altogether, you know?
Yeah.
But it's but that's the thing you're saying, like, in terms of how the Dublin accent plays. It's really, I always think of the kind of the schizophrenic thing when Irish football, when we were kings of the world, i.e. the first time we were in the World Cup, and you always had that really, like, oh, Ireland, we're the best, and then the lads would come on and they all had English accents, so everyone had that kind of comp, but they all sound English. Yeah. And Tony Cascarino in the background, actually, by the way, you know, so. Like, yeah. It does. It's incredibly tribal, and again, I think it's such a, like, what's a real dub? You're getting into the profound shit now of, like, what's a real dub? What's a real dub accent? Like, I've seen people I've had people say, that's not a real Dublin accent, do you know what I mean? Or what's a proper, what constitutes that also, a like, real Dublin, you know?
That question goes back to what, like, me and the gentleman has just been talking about as well, is that, like, you know, because the accent's the first thing that people kind of, like, identify you with the minute you open your mouth, they hear you and kind of think, okay, he's English, okay, he's Irish or whatever, you know? And, like, you know, you said something very interesting even earlier on, like, you know, you were kind of saying that, like, you've noticed that because you're hanging out with your boyfriend and his cousins and his friends, that your accents have changed. So it's like, I mean, you know, accents change all the time, depending on where we are.
No, definitely.
So it becomes, it's almost like it's that thing. It's like, you know, they're kind of like, okay, are you a Catholic or a Protestant? Well, actually, no, I'm an atheist. So are you Catholic, atheist, or a Protestant atheist?
Yeah. And even just like what Jenny was saying there as well, like saying that, like even like as far back, like I remember when I was going looking for work, like I changed my accent. Like if I was going into an interview, I'd change my address going into an interview. Like seriously, like because that's the way I think it still is like that in some kind of places now. And like if I was going into an interview, I'd talk completely different. And I'd feel like I'm letting myself down, but like I need a job. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, but like now, like what I'm doing, that is my job. Like, and I can actually like feel like I can finally be who I am, and people appreciate me for me. I don't have to kind of pretend or put on an accent when I'm going in to find a job. Like, whereas I would have done that before. Like, I live like on a, where I live, it's like the Mexican borderline. Like, do you remember those Ray Foley posters going around? And he used to say it'd be him like crossing his arms, and it'd be like welcome to Glasnevin, welcome to Finglas. Well, the bus stop outside my house said welcome to Coolock on one side, and then welcome to Santry on the other side. So it was like banging in the centre. But like, yeah, like I changed my dress to like Santry instead of Coolock, so I could even get an interview. Like, but I still think that goes on now. Like, but it's funny that still does go on now, because you can't really, I don't think your accent really defines like who you are either. Like, and it does change over time, so it's kind of, do you know what I mean?
But your postcode can, like, I remember living through the now infamous Dublin 12, Dublin 6W infamy, when all of a sudden people were on the borderline of, you know, you'd go, I'm from Green Hills. Is that Tala? You know, and similarly, Green Hills was on the cusp of Terran Ure, you know, and they really wanted it to be Terran Ure.
Yeah.
So they did the 6W flip over because it put around 10 grand on the value of your house, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Dublin 6W.
Which explains why Aircode hasn't taken off at all. Someone else had their hand up with a question there? Yep, woman there.
Yeah, mentioned something about the kind of the history of the accent going back years, and the kind of classic insult that people from outside Dublin used to describe Dublin people is the Jackeen, which was always associated with the Union Jack and the idea that they were somehow a bit English. So I wondered if any research that any of you did you come across any connections between English accents and the Dublin accent? Because it is kind of distinct from other Irish accents, I think, in some way. It does have its own quality, quite different from South accents, West accents, North accents.
So yeah, so the influence of the English accent on the Dublin accent.
Well, it's because actually that's where most of the English settlement first happened, was through the Norman invasion right through, was on the East Coast. So the most of the rest of the country actually retained speaking Gaelic for far longer. So it's really just down to the fact that we have been speaking English longer than anywhere else in the country. And actually there was one point in the 15th, 16th century where there was only North County Dublin were speaking English. Okay. And the rest of the country was allowed to speak Irish. So that's how that happened, as far as I know.
Okay. Next question. Woman here.
I just was more in response to the lady's question there. Like, you'll find too that Irish accents actually influenced English accents a lot. Like Cockney rhyming slang originally would have come from Irish immigrants into London, and certainly like Manchester, Liverpool, like their accents are heavily influenced by Irish accents, so it's kind of like a two-way thing.
Well, there's actually a book written now where Daniel Cassidy, I think his name is, who has actually written how the Irish invented slang, and they actually brought it to the States like through the famine years, and the whole slang range based in Brooklyn, and it was called Little Irish Town. And he's actually gone back through chronologically through, like, even the word dude came from the Irish word, Gaelic word dude, D-U, father D. So there's thousands of words that have been actually gone over to the States where that so it is, we have infiltrated the whole world with our language, which is amazing. Like the word smithereen, you know, all these words that went into the English language came from Irish.
The word Donnybrook,
you know,
which is a fight.
Yeah.
Which is another fantastic.
So we're not just like, we don't have just the best football team in the world. We also have the best language in the world.
We own the world when it comes to English. Yeah.
Who run the world? Us Paddies. Next question.
I would be interesting just to ask about Samuel Beckett, given, you know, the way you had said he was speaking rather broadly and then would fall into a Dublin accent. And given his position, you know, from Dunleary or Fox Rock, you know, from probably Anglo, you know, background, what was the Dublin accent that he fell into? Like, given this whole, I suppose, north-south divide.
It was a neutral Dublin accent. It's well worth checking out the clip. It wasn't a
rare old times accent?
No. It's not a rare old times accent. It's not a kind of like a Scanger accent. God forbid it's hot. It's obviously not the kind of Dart accent. It's like it's immediately identifiable as a Dublin accent. You know, and it's just it's weird whether it's kind of like a muscle memory or something like that. It suddenly comes out and you're thinking, Jesus Christ, you know, like he really was a dope, you know.
That's the first mention of a Scanger accent in the whole proceeding. You're from the country, aren't you, Jim?
Yeah.
Anywhere not Dublin? In the country. What constitutes a Scanger accent?
I'm not going to do it. But this is something.
Yeah, actually, Jim, would you do a Dublin accent for us, Jim? Do a Dublin accent. Go on.
Look, myself and Jenny, and I think you as well, Derek, were talking about this in the interval, and like the Scanger accent is kind of like, you know, you all know what it is. There's no fucking need for me to imitate it. It's that lot. It's a lot, that long drawn out accent.
No, that's the I'm on. That's actually, if you want to talk about, because I have talked to physicians about this. Is going like, because there's a certain point where if you're in town in Dublin, you turn around, you go, how many people on heroin are in the immediate vicinity?
And that's why you have
that. So when you're talking about, that's another, but in terms of
that's where seemingly it came from.
Yeah.
That's where,
like, in terms of the flatness of the accent and what.
It's all drawn out.
But it's an actual reaction. No, but it's an actual. The doctor's saying it's an actual. No, he's saying it's an actual reaction to how it slows down the motor reflexes, slows down, it flattens everything out, and that's where the accent.
That's where it kind of originated from. Yeah, and Dave McSavage is a brilliant imitation of it all. Like, and
you were saying earlier on, Jenny, about where it came from, though, in the first place, and it is related to drugs.
It is. Mm. That's the theory that it's related to drugs, that because they were so out of it, that this nasally thing became very prominent. So the thing came out. And then there's another theory that it came down to, you know, inner city people, heroin or otherwise, actually being tougher than each other, and the worse your actual accent was, the tougher you were, don't fuck with me. You know, so there's that combined.
I don't think that. Like, I think, like, for example, like my boyfriend's uncle, like he was a heroin addict, but like he hasn't done it for years now, but his accent is still like that. It hasn't changed it hasn't changed, like, and he still like would talk like that, and he'd be real like, oh, like that, like,
really, because
I don't believe that they're trying to do it to be real, like, you know, I'm harder than you. Like,
no,
I don't,
they're thinking
that,
like,
now,
that, like, it could have influenced through time from the 80s, like, that it could have actually influenced through time.
Well, they say in the 80s as well, they say, like, my auntie was actually telling me about what she heard. I think it was on the radio or something. She said that in the 80s, like, why people started going on heroin was they were coming down off, like, the ecstasy buzz, and, like, people be like, oh, yeah, try this, it will bring you down. And that's how there's so many people, like, in inner city and outside, like, on heroin now, like, and in their 40s and 50s. And that's, I think that's where it's come from. It's from that, like, that's where that kind of, I wouldn't even say it's an accent, but, like, that's where it's come from. Like, it's like, and it's, like, his hasn't, like, I don't think he's done that for now for years. Like, I would have known, like, you know, but, like, he still talks like that now, and that's almost part of his identity, almost, like, it hasn't kind of come out with it. And, like, even as far as, like, his girlfriend will talk the same as well, so it's not just men, it'd be women as well, like, you know. And it's kind of, yeah, like, it is strange, like, because it's funny how something like that could change your accent, even if you aren't doing it anymore. Like, you're so used to talking like that, it's almost embedded.
I went to a few years ago, it was like, and I was saying, like, the line between Beckett and the Dublin accent is like Adam and Paul, if you've ever seen Adam and Paul, which plays to me like, it's like waiting for Godot on heroin, you know. And there's I went to a thing a few years ago where they presented, it was like just a presentation, it was a inner city theatre thing, and they did two lads played junkies, but they did scenes from Waiting for Godot, but they just did it as two junkies. But the thing is, in terms of the language, the pauses, the beats, the drawn out, the rhythm of it, it was perfect. It was beautiful. It was amazing. So this was before I saw Adam and Paul, and Adam and Paul and Me, which is, I think, is one of the greatest, if not the best. It has the Beckett, you know, the space in between the words, but at the same time, it's so Dublin. And Mark O'Halloran, okay, who wrote it, and again, that's not his world, but he lived for years up on Mountjoy Square. Oh, yeah. He lived in flat Mountjoy Square, and it was just what he saw. And that's the thing, is that, again, it's just having that. There is an incredible kind of beauty and lyricism that you can tune into to big time. And that's the thing, is that all of a sudden it's... And it is as unique as the kind of the Brooklyn. That's what you're saying. You have Roddy Doyle does it one way, Marco Rowe does
but
it the
other.
It's
also as unique as the new D4 accent as well. I mean, it's kind of the...
I think the new D4 accent, and again, if you say Lenny Abramson when he made... what Richard did, you know what I mean? All of a sudden he achieved the impossible. He made us feel sympathetic for people from D4. Do you know what I mean? So he
sounds like Jack Rayner's brooding look, and he's with their blue eyes.
But again, so much with the oh, those eyes, damn you, Rayner. There's so much of the D4 stuff is pure caricature. It's a shorthand for wanker, you know, so much of the time in terms of when you're rolling it out. So... no one wants to see a searing drama about the lives of D4 people, but then you saw what Richard did, which is a really powerful, tragic film. So we took it into really... And again, it's what an artist does with it. Because the thing about Dublin is that we are in love with language, full stop. So all of a sudden, the more you can do amazing things with it.
Next question. That's got time for about one or two more questions. If anyone's got to add anything to the discussion.
Can I just say, I just think language and phraseology, it's a living kind of breathing kind of thing as well. And I think what Jenny and Eva are doing is kind of like recording in a way, the phraseology, or recording the kind of the tribal part of it. And that's really important because it is living and breathing and it changes, and there's so many outside influences that can kind of interrupt things. And they do, I think it kind of moves on kind of quite quick that we don't even really notice it. So it's to kind of record is really important. And for an artist to put their own slant on it as well is really important. And it's great what they're doing, and to keep doing that.
It's weird what sticks around, though. I was like looking at a Hairy Baby. You know Hairy Baby, the T-shirt people? Have you ever seen their website? They just do T-shirts of... great sayings, you know, of great Dublin sayings. No,
I
don't like them.
I say to just do T-shirts of Hairy Babies.
Hairy Babies, I'd buy one. But again, they do a T-shirt with Stop the Lights. Stop the Lights on it, you know. Stop the Lights is from Quicksilver. You know, like Stop the Lights is something that Bunny Carr used to say in 1976.
Yeah, but on a series, on actually, there have been actually dictionaries of Hiberno-English written, you know. I mean, like Terence Dolan is a professor, and he's in his fourth edition. There was Bernard, Cher, is it Cher? Yeah. And he, unfortunately, he's passed away since. And he did 3 editions, you know. So there's people who take it really, really seriously and spend their life, work, like, to the history of every single phrase. Yeah. Mm.
But I think over generations, it travels. It's like the Ruby Murray. It's like all of the stuff that just gets sucked in, and it evolves, and it. So the lexicon constantly expands.
But then there's also times, like, I mean, I look upon things like that Hairy Baby things as kind of like a school of kind of like fake nostalgia. You know, that, like, you know, there's this way of this hackneyed kitsch way of kind of like taking certain things, like, you know, even the expression Hairy Baby comes from Father Ted, it comes from elsewhere as well, and Stop the Lights. There's a way, it turns phrases and it turns lexicon into cliche, you know? And it's just like sometimes you kind of, it's the same with kind of the certain publications, certain online publications, and the way they just use that kind of fake nostalgia for things which, like, wasn't Red Lemonade great? There's all this kind of shorthand about being Irish, about being Dublin, and you're kind of it's hackneyed.
I think if you're here, maybe it is, but I think that what I would presume, I look at that stuff, and it's probably not for people who live in Ireland anymore, in terms of stuff that travels. And like, if you're living somewhere else, or if you've been somewhere else for a couple of years, and somebody pulls out, you talk to someone, and they suddenly pull out a Dublinism you haven't heard. It's fantastic, you know. It's
But at the same time, kind of like you know, like Christmas was a month ago, and like you look at like a year, it felt like a year ago. Christmas was a month ago, and like you look up at all these, all these kind of like, especially with the Irish Times and that generation immigration thing, which really gets on my wick. This is Jim ranting, by the way, now. So it's like there's all this thing about like people looking to this kind of like ideal of what Ireland and Dublin's about, a place where, oh, we've we've got like, I mean, sausages, we've got black puddings, we got like Barry's tea, and like, well, it's the best place to spend Christmas. And sometimes it's not. And I think we sometimes are supposed to like amplify certain elements of Irish culture and kind of forget other bits, forget the reality sometimes.
Wait, are you trying to get us all to go, okay, Jim, Dublin's a cape. Is that what you want to hear, Jim?
Sorry.
The whole point, Jim, is that Dublin is a cape. But the whole thing about Dublin is that...
Classic.
I come back and Dublin is a complete mess. Okay, Dublin is completely schizophrenic. It's an absolute cape. It is all over the shop. It makes no sense whatsoever. When I went in to meet you for breakfast yesterday morning, I was 50 minutes on, half an hour on the bus in Cambridge, stuck, just sit in the rain. The city does not flow. And I love it, like a ridiculous amount. You know, I'm mad about it. Like, it's I love Dublin. You know, it's like all the great cities.
You are loving Dublin.
With a G. But like any other, you know.
Sorry, Noel.
If I had a dog, I'd bring my dog in here. Oh, no, wait, I can't. Do you know, it's like any other great city. It's a complete mess. It makes no sense whatsoever. Nothing, you know, it collapses in on top. And that's what makes it. That's what makes it. You can't. So I think anything that kind of celebrates, the begrudger thing that everyone goes into. Everyone's very quick to go, your man's, you only have to be on television once to be that prick off the telly for the rest of your life, you know. But like, there's so much of that going on. So I kind of happily every once in a while, you know, because everyone has the kind of sure, aren't we great, you know. But at the same time, you know, when stuff like when you have this crazy Oscar year like we're having now, so all of a sudden where you have like a above average Irish presence, it is kind of deadly, you know. So it's you know, I think it's,
listen,
okay.
We were oppressed for so long. I mean, the main thing of the English coming here was actually to take away every single bit of Irish culture and an Irish language that we had, and we've hung on to as much as we could. So I mean, I don't see anything wrong in celebrating Kerrygold
or a sausage or whatever it is.
I consider myself now scolded, and I'd like to say a huge thanks very much to all of you for coming out tonight. I really appreciate it, but big
yous.
Thanks. Use, there's certain words like use which are kind of crept into this Tipperary man's. This Tipperary man's.
That came from actually again the English trying to enforce this thee, thou, you, that, right? And so in the 17th century they introduced you is or you are, right? And the Irish people just couldn't. They were like this, and so they dropped it again, right? So the Irish just went, fuck it. Let's just put an S on the you. Let's make it plural. So that's where yous came from, as in like cow, cows, you, yous. Yous better come in from.
That's just, I thought I'd eat, and if I say ye, my kids don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
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 And they replaced ye with yous. And then the first time it's used again, actually, well, it's referred to as being used again, is in The Van by Roddy Doyle, when he writes it as yes. And that's where it seemingly comes from.
Yeah. Same.
This whole night was worth.
This language thing is amazing. For next month,
this whole night was worth just that nugget. So
for next month's banter, we're going to bring an English person in and try get them to say Gallagher. and Deirdre.
From the very end, Derek, Aoife, and Jenny. Huge thanks. And again, thank all of yous for coming along tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. Check out thisisbanter.com for more information on what we're up to. Safe home to you all. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks a million to Aoife, Jenny and Derek for joining us at Banter. This podcast was produced by Banter series producer Tanya White. Check out thisisbanter.com for news of where we're up to at Banter. Plus, you can also listen back to all the Banter podcasts to date. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.